So, what the Buddha did was to take this whole concept of feelings, and he basically just defined it as pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. So, you know, you could say, well, if he really simplified it, well, he did. The reason he simplified it in that way was so that we could understand that if we have a pleasant feeling, like a piece of food or a sensual feeling that we might feel in the body, comfort, begins to open the door to desire. Because we want more, but it's pleasant, right? And so we want more. And that can lead to greed, that can lead to craving, that can lead to attachment, right? Clinging and wanting more, and you know, building a whole life to get more of what we want. And on the other side, you know, things we don't like, you know, we react with aversion, hatred, pushing away, avoiding, not, you know, engaging. And then neutrality are things that don't register on our like or dislike meter, so we're just indifferent to them. We just, you know, we don't pay attention to them. So we're, you know, as the saying goes, we spend our lives running after things we can't get, running away from things we don't like, and not knowing that we're caught up in this gerbil wheel of running away, you know, running for things we like and running away for things we don't like. This is the wheel of suffering. So in order to begin to understand how suffering, in terms of greed and aversion, how we're controlled by these forces of greed and aversion, we have to begin to understand the process of pleasant, unpleasant, how we respond to things we like and things we don't like, and how these response patterns begin to condition our behavior in the world. So this is a very profound and beautiful way of understanding, you know, how feelings operate in terms of their the sort of moral, ethical implications in the world, and how these implications can lead to either awakening or suffering. So either way you go, you know, how we, this deeper understanding of how we respond to our experience is the key to, you know, awakening or further suffering. So this week, we're going to continue this discussion, and the emphasis will be on the impermanence and the ephemerality of feelings as they arise in our experience. Now, feelings arise and they pass away. You know, they don't stay all the time, right? So the thing is to understand the nature of these feelings in terms of how they arise in our awareness and how they pass away. So as we begin to see our feelings more clearly, we begin to see their impermanent and ephemeral nature. As we see directly, not intellectually, the transitory and changing nature of whatever feelings are arising, whether pleasant or unpleasant or neutral, we become less identified with them. You know, a feeling arises, and we understand that it's, you know, it's not going to be forever. We don't, you know, there's a tendency not to take it so seriously, not to take it so subjectively. We understand that this is a feeling that's arising in the mind, in the body, you know, that this too shall pass, and particularly if they're negative feelings. And it gives us a sense of perspective and spaciousness, a sense of patience. Whenever negative emotions might be arising and we feel pressured by the emotions that we're experiencing. We become less attached to the pleasant, knowing that it's just going to arise and pass away. We get less fearful of the unpleasant, knowing that it too is impermanent. One good way of thinking about this is to see this kind of learning, this whole learning about our emotional experiences in the very ordinary life process of simply growing up. As we grow, we tend to develop, as we mature, we tend to develop a growing sense of equanimity in the face of feelings. Now think back to when you were a child, or just think of a child that you might know, and you'll see that in children there's a tremendous sense of emotional lability or instability. Now lability means, you know, quickly changing emotions. With every passing experience, we can watch kids go from laughter to tears to laughter all within a couple of seconds. just as our minds are responding to pleasant and then unpleasant, painful feelings. Moment after moment, there's this tremendous movement, swings of emotion. Then as we grow older, as we see more clearly our feelings and have more wisdom, more maturity about their impermanent nature, we're not quite as reactive, not as subject to quite the same rapidity of emotional swings based on pleasant or unpleasant feelings. There's a greater sense of equanimity and ease. It's just, you know, don't get so excited. Cool out, chill. this, it's okay. You know, you don't have to get so, you know, freaked out. You know, so as we get older, we're able to manage our emotions. So it's this sense of relativity. You know, things, it's not the end of the world, you know. So, and this is really a sense of wisdom about ourselves as we experience our emotions. In one passage, the Buddha compares this play of feelings, this arising and passing of the pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, to the changing winds in the sky. Just as many diverse winds blow back and forth across the sky, easterly winds and westerly winds, northerly winds and southerly winds, dusty winds and dustless ones, sometimes cold, sometimes hot, those that are strong, others mild, winds of many kinds that blow, so in this very body, various kinds of feelings arise, pleasant ones, painful ones, those that are neither painful nor pleasant. But when a bhikkhu, or an enlightened being, who is ardent, does not neglect clear knowing, then that wise one fully understands feelings in their entirety. Having fully understood feelings, one is taintless in this very life. So one is immune to the second dart, that these feelings can provoke in one's life. Now, although it's easy to understand that all of these feelings are impermanent, we know that on a certain level, it's not always easy to sustain this awareness, to sustain this wisdom. So in both little and big ways, we find our minds at different times reactive to the feelings, caught up in attachment, caught up in aversion, and often leading to different actions in the world that can be skillful or unskillful, harmful or loving and kind. So this is how we use our meditation practice. And this is the second foundation of mindfulness, that the Buddha spoke of. We practice refining our attention, honing in more precisely to feelings, becoming aware of the subtle and sometimes not so subtle movements of the mind. So the whole training meditatively is to become more aware of our feelings. Now, for example, this is given in the meditative context. Say you're doing walking meditation, just in the awareness of the movement, the sensations of the body. And then a thought comes up, oh, I'd love to have a cup of tea. So the thought is coming into the mind while you're doing this meditation, or even if you're sitting, doing sitting meditation. Now we have two choices. Associated with that thought is a pleasant feeling. Thought comes in, which is pleasant, and if we are the instructed noble disciple at that moment, we'll notice the pleasantness of the thought, understand its impermanence, see how the pleasant feeling arises and passes away, and then just go on walking. Just let it go and go on walking. If we're not mindful, if at that moment we are the uninstructed worldling, the person who's not aware, the non-awakened, then we don't notice the pleasant feeling. We become identified. We don't notice that it's pleasant, right? It just comes up and we like it. We identify with that feeling. Oh, I want that. You have that feeling of desire for that cup of tea. I want that tea. Then we can become identified, reactive to it, and this desire arises, desire for that cup of tea. And we get caught up in that attachment, and then we start to go get the tea, right? Thinking that the tea is actually going to make us happy, it's going to please us, all the time missing that it's just a reaction to that feeling that we missed. So, think about the practical consequences, right? You're deeply involved in meditation and everything is fine and you're focusing on the body, you're in the zone, and all of a sudden, this cup of tea comes up, and all of a sudden, you just go off in this other direction. And what you would have achieved, you know, in that time that you would have been meditating is completely lost. And you've been completely distracted, you know, by this feeling, this pleasant feeling that you've identified with, which has basically hooked you and just dragged you off from your course of action. So this is how we get distracted. We get hooked by our feelings in ways that, and we identify with them, and they allow them to seduce us and draw us off from where we need to be going. So this is really, you know, this is called a distraction, right? You know, how many times have we procrastinated? You know, we're supposed to be reading a book or writing a paper or doing a task, and all of a sudden, you know, that cup of coffee just you know, feels so good, or you want to go to the refrigerator and see, you know, get something to eat, you know, fix a bag of popcorn or go watch some TV. You know, it's these thoughts that come into our mind and often hook us. We identify with it. We say, oh, I'm hungry, or I'm bored, I don't want to do this, and boom, before you know it, you know, we get drawn away from what we should be doing. So we have many opportunities. This happens all the time, right, to look at this process during the day. How is the mind, if there are pleasant physical sensations arising, pleasant sexual feelings arising, sexual fantasies arising, you see... You know, how many times do you have sexual fantasies? Men have sexual fantasies about women. Women might have sexual fantasies about men. The mind just gets distracted. We start thinking about these things and we identify with them. We don't see that, sexual fantasy arising. We see it arising. We're aware that's arising. And we notice it. And we sort of, you know, like in the meditation process, we let it go. And we, because we know it's impermanent and it will gradually fade away, and we just let it fade away. It's okay. I mean, whatever arises, see, this is the point of this whole practice. Whatever arises, arises of its own accord. It's not bad that it arises. It's not bad that whatever, you might feel anger, you might feel jealousy, you might feel sexual stimulation if you look at another person. But these are natural processes arising in the body due to conditions, right, that led us to have those feelings. So this is an important point. Whatever arises, whatever feelings arise in the body is okay. They're to be accepted as arising within your body. So this is not about denial of what's happening to us in terms of what we're feeling. That's not the problem. The problem is what we do about those feelings. You see what I'm saying? If we relate to those feelings and identify with them and allow them to seduce us, boom, we're just dragged off the course. But if we see these feelings as natural feelings arising, not necessarily to be taken, you know, so seriously, so personally, so in a personal identified way, like I am attracted, or I like this, or I like that, or I don't like this, I don't like that, we can see that these feelings are simply natural processes arising in our minds that we can observe, and over time they begin to pass away. Now, this basic understanding, I mean, this is the foundation of addiction treatment. When for example, as you work with people, as I've worked with people in a 12-step program that have addictive, you know, tendencies, you know, addiction is not a substance problem. Addiction is an emotional problem that comes from the mind in terms of our feelings. So the substance use is really a response to our inability to manage the feelings that we're having in our body. And it could be anger, it could be frustration, it could be lack of self-esteem, lack of security, lack of a sense of insecurity. And so we use the substance to assuage, you know, that sense of fear, panic, aversion, or, you know, unpleasant feelings that we have in our body and our mind, right? So the substance is really a response to the primary problem of what we're feeling in the body. So oftentimes when I work with people in this capacity, when the desire for, say, a cigarette or you know, a glass of wine or a beer or alcohol or drugs arise, try to be aware of the fact that, okay, given the fact that you are this way, it's completely understandable that you would have a substance dependency. Because, you know, you're feeling abused, or you're feeling neglected or lonely or insecure, or something's happening in your life. So it's okay that you would want to have some kind of relief from your pain. It's okay. But when that craving arises, you don't have to automatically do what that craving says. You can see that craving arising as a natural response to your pain, but you don't have to get hooked. You can feel it arising in the body. You can literally feel it in the body arising, this desire for that cigarette, or this desire for that, you know, the alcohol, or, you know, or marijuana, or drugs, or heroin, or, you know, cocaine. Just feel it in the... I mean, this is what cold turkey is, right? You know, you feel it in the body, you allow it to move through the body, but you just don't, you know, you don't respond. You let it arise in the body, and you let it move through the body, and eventually over time, it begins to, you know, subside over time. This is the way these feelings move through the body. So it's the ultimate sense of spaciousness, you know, stepping back and not just automatically getting hooked by whatever feeling arises in the body. And that the way we get hooked is driven by the way we identify with our feelings. If we can see the feelings arising as okay, as natural, as how one would respond to the situation that you're in, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to take that substance. Because if you take that substance, it's only going to worsen your situation. It's going to cause more suffering. So once you start to understand these dynamics, this is a very practical thing. You know, it's like we're not talking about some esoteric notion of non-self. This is how we, you know, apply this to, you know, our everyday experience, particularly in the case of, you know, addiction, which can be, you know, very painful and very, very serious. So, for example, how does the mind operate when there are, you know, pleasant physical sensations arising, perhaps even pleasant sexual feelings arising, sexual fantasies arising? I mean, the whole issue of rape, right? I mean, when you look at male behavior, you know, you look at all the criminal statistics, you know, you read the newspaper, you know, how much criminal activity is driven by uncontrolled sexual fantasies, right? How women are abused by men, physically abused by men, who have no control over their, you know, pleasant feelings, right? Sexual fantasies. They identify with their sexual fantasy and they've got to do something and, you know, rape happens. And, you know, if you look at most of the crime in the papers, a good 75% of it has to do with some kind of, you know, sexual abuse, you know, of a woman by a man. This horrendous thing that happened in, what was it, in Africa? The UN, you know, hospital was overrun by, I think it was in Sudanese soldiers, and, you know, the women were, you know, raped and abused, and it's just horrible, you know, the things that go on. But, you know, ISIS in the Middle East, you know, the women... It's just terrible, you know. And, but this is all about feelings that are uncontrolled, you know. They're just uncontrolled feelings. So when we have these pleasant feelings, what do we do? Do we indulge, or do we just sit there in a state of enjoyment, you know, sort of understanding the feelings are here, they're okay, they're good feelings, and we don't have to act? Or maybe we have another reaction. Maybe the mind is afraid of feeling or pulling back from it. We pull back, we tighten, we contract. You know, this is another response. Or can we simply rest in the open, empty awareness of pleasant, not attached, not pushing away, letting all the feelings come, arise, and pass away by themselves? as they arise and pass away. Just observing this process of the feelings arising in my mind. So this is mindfulness. Rather than just simply identifying and just jumping in and doing something that could cause suffering for oneself and for others. So this is how this works. You know, through the link of identification, you know, subjectively identifying with that experience, and all of a sudden, boom, doing something unskillful and harmful. On the other hand, how does the mind respond to discomfort in the body? When you're sitting and there's some pain, can you be mindful of the unpleasantness? Or does the mind go into reactive mode? Or maybe at different times, maybe you're feeling ill. How does the mind react to that unpleasant feeling? Can you incorporate that into your practice, simply noting unpleasant, unpleasant? So you can see what we're doing, right? We're trying to bring into awareness, you know, the way pleasant feelings or unpleasant feelings come into our conscious experience, and not just simply react automatically, you know, through the process of identification and, you know, having to get seduced and sucked into action without the sense of awareness, consciousness. We're bringing consciousness to this process. Now, the Buddha gave some very distinct instruction. He said, you should train like this. My body may be sick, yet my mind will not be afflicted. This is the first dark and the second dark, right? My body may be sick, but my mind will not be afflicted. May my body be dying, but may my mind not be afflicted. He's pointing to the very important understanding that absolutely nothing is outside of our practice. No experience we have, no matter how pleasant or how unpleasant, we need to bring the same degree of mindful attention, noting the pleasant, noting the unpleasant. Our mind can remain unafflicted. How are we with difficult external situations, unpleasant external situations? How does the mind respond to something that's unpleasant externally? So this is part of the practice. Observing how you respond, you know, to your situations, bringing that into the realm of consciousness. Now, there's a very interesting story told by the Thai forest master Ajahn Chah, a very famous teacher. He went to a retreat for himself in a little meditation hut outside of the village where he had been teaching. This is in Thailand. One of the nights he was practicing, the villagers were having a big party. And there was a lot of music and loudspeakers and noise. And according to the story, he was getting very irritated, upset, and annoyed by all this noise. Now, if any of you have traveled in Asia, you know, like particularly in Southeast Asia, everywhere you go, you hear these big loudspeakers, you know, like government, you know, channels and playing music. And, you know, everywhere, you can't get away from these loudspeakers. They're all over the place, particularly in the rural areas, because in villages and stuff, you know, they have these. Oftentimes government, you know, kind of, because people don't have radios and, you know, stereos at home. So he's listening, he's trying to meditate, and he's being bothered by all this noise. But then he saw what was happening in his own mind, and he said, well, they're just having a good time down there, and I'm making myself miserable up here. I'm getting all upset. No matter how upset I get, my anger is just making more noise internally. And then he had this insight. The sound is just the sound. It's me who is going out to annoy it. I'm the one who's getting annoyed. The sound is just the sound. I'm the one who's getting annoyed. If I leave the sound alone, it won't annoy me. You know, if I don't let it annoy me, it won't annoy me. It'll just be there. It's just doing what it has to do. That's what sound does. It makes sound. This is their job. So if I don't go out and bother the sound, it's not going to bother me. So it's like he's, by getting annoyed, you know, he's, you know, showing his reactivity to the sound. So what he's describing is the mind's tendency to react to the unpleasantness of the sound, and then his realization that it was only his own reactivity that was causing his suffering. That unpleasantness is just what it is, unpleasant sound. It's not a problem when we're mindful of it and just say, unpleasant sound. just let it go. Don't react. You know, don't identify with it and, you know, get reactive. So one further point with regard to feeling and mindfulness of feeling. Often we don't see that it's the feeling itself that is the pleasantness, unpleasant, or neutrality that we are reacting to, and not the object itself. We get caught up more in the feelings than what actually caused the feelings to occur. We think it's the sound we don't like, or we think it's the fantasy that we want, or we think it's some object that we like or don't like, but it's not the object, it's not the sound, it's not the fantasy. What the mind is reacting to is the feeling tone arising in that moment of contact, you know, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. It's the pleasantness that we like. It's the unpleasantness that we don't like. If we don't see this, then we get into a struggle with the object. When we do see it and we become mindful of the feeling, it's much easier to see that the feeling is just impermanent, arising and passing away. It's easier to see the ephemeral, impermanent nature of the feeling. In other words, we get caught up in our reactivity, and we don't see how that reactivity is caused by a certain thing. You know, what the karmic cause and effect process is. And once we see that, oh, it makes sense. Okay, let it go. I'm just upset because these people are doing these things. And I have no control over what these people are doing. So why do I get upset about the noise that they're making that's, you know, that's causing me to suffer? So we see that more clearly. It's easier, you know, to let it go. So as we practice mindfulness of feelings, it is important to incorporate this into your practice and apply this part of the teaching. Practice recognizing and using the noting, recognizing the arising of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral feelings with a sense of immediacy. Really bring the mind in close with a sense of interest, with a sense of investigation and inquiry, of trying to understand directly for yourself what is the nature of pleasantness, what is the nature of unpleasantness. And in doing that, become very clear that these feelings, this quality of pleasantness, unpleasantness, and neutrality, are empty of substance or changing in every moment. We become less entranced by them, less reactive to them, and in the words of one Tibetan teacher, we learn to rest our weary minds. I love that. We rest our weary minds. It's wearying to be reactive to every feeling that arises. You know, we just burn a lot of mental energy. It's weary. And we come to a place of ease, we come to a place of rest, when we can simply be mindful of them and not reactive. So this is the Buddha's instruction to those interested in liberation. It's a very explicit instruction. He said, whatever feelings arise, whether pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, abide contemplating impermanence in those feelings. Contemplate fading away, the passing away, letting go of those feelings. Contemplating thus, we do not cling to anything in this world. Contemplate the impermanence in those feelings, the passing away, the letting go of these feelings. Contemplating thus, we do not cling to anything in this world. When we don't cling, there is no agitation, and we're not agitated, we attain liberation. So it's all about being aware of our feelings, allowing ourselves to have that space of mindfulness when these feelings arise, and being able to not get hooked by, you know, by the hook of identification of self into our emotions, which cause us to, you know, perpetrate unskillful, unwholesome actions in response. There's one thing I do want to say, and I'll just add this as a comment. Last week, at the end of the sitting, someone came up to me and asked an excellent question. And I had wished that she had asked it, you know, during the session so that everybody could hear. But I'd like to share that question and my response to it, because I think it really kind of adds to this whole discussion about feelings, particularly unpleasant feelings. One of the things we talked about was how we use meditation in two ways. One is to manage the emotional impact that a feeling might have. You could call it emotional regulation. So anger, you know, rage, or you know, depression. There are ways to address the energy of the feeling itself, you know, through mindfulness, that begins to attenuate and weaken the power of the energy of that emotion, you know, as we observe it with mindfulness. So that's kind of associated with what we call emotional regulation, and it's a common technique used in mindfulness-based stress reduction. There's another sort of technique which is associated with, I guess you could say that the best analogy is you can control weeds by mowing the weeds with a lawnmower or pulling the weed out by the root. Now, if you mow the weed with lawnmower, I mean, you know, you've controlled it for the short term, but in about 2 or 3 months, the weeds will be back, right? You haven't, you know, they're still there, the roots are still there. But if you really want to remove the weeds, you have to pull them out by the roots. So there are two sort of approaches. Now, the way to pull the weed out by the roots is, in your meditative process, you're working with the emotional energy, you know, of the energy, the literal energy of the emotion. But you're also looking at your reactivity to that, you know, where that emotion is coming from in terms of your reactivity to the situation. So as you look at that, you're beginning to extend your understanding to what caused you to react in the way that you did. What was it in your past that made you sensitive to the situation in the way that you were, that caused you to have this negative reaction? So what we're doing is we're looking at the karmic implications, right, of what caused you to react the way you did. And as you deepen in your insight of why you responded the way you did, we're extending the span of our understanding of what caused us to react in a certain way. So that understanding creates the sense of wisdom, the sense of knowing how I got triggered, why I got triggered, and, you know, why I was, you know, vulnerable to the situation that caused me to have this, you know, reaction. As we do that, of course, once you've created this understanding, that emotion will no longer have the same effect on you that it had in the past, because now you're aware, now you're conscious of how you got triggered. So the next time a person says something like that to you, you won't respond in the same way. So, I mean, that's how transformation starts to occur. So you're no longer triggered by those kinds of causes that would make you angry or, you know, reactive. So the question was, okay, so I understand that. You know, I understand how what triggered me and why I was triggered, and, you know. But, you know, the situation might come up and I'll still feel the same reaction. I'll still feel anger, even though I know what caused me. You know, it doesn't take away the reactiveness. It doesn't take away my anger. So, you know, what can you say about that? So that's very, you know, the answer that I gave was, As you're repeatedly sort of triggered by a particular circumstance, you know, say maybe it's a family member that's chronically doing something to annoy you or something like that. So it happens again and again and again. It's your husband or your wife or, you know, sibling or something. Every time it occurs, because you know it happens, you know why it happened, why it got triggered, what the particular patterns of this person was that caused them to behave in the way they did, it's like by attrition. Every time it happens, the emotional reactivity on your part, it may be triggered, but it'll be a little less than the last time. It'll be a little less than the last time, a little less than the last time. It doesn't normally just go away. In other words, the point here is that it's not that we're going to be free of anger, or we're going to be free of sadness, or anxiety, or grief, or whatever afflictive emotions. This is not about eliminating afflictive emotions. This is really important to understand. We still will have afflictive emotions. If somebody insults me, I will get angry. If somebody says something nasty to me, I will be reactive. I shouldn't get down on myself because I got angry that somebody went and said something insulting to me. But the point is, if I have the basis of understanding that allows me to know how I got triggered, then I am conscious. I'm living in consciousness so that when I respond to whatever triggered me, I'm responding out of conscious awareness, out of a conscious choice. If I respond negatively, or if I respond with wisdom and compassion and understanding, I know that's what I'm doing. So I'm bringing a greater degree of awareness into my life, which allows me to be more compassionate, more forgiving, more accepting. But it's not that I'm not going to get triggered. I will get triggered. So, and a lot of people misunderstand this, and they think that, if once you've worked with your afflictive emotions, you won't feel anger anymore, you won't feel jealousy, you won't feel envy, you'll be just, this wonderful person who's just full of love and compassion. No, we're human beings, right? If somebody insults me, I will feel angry. But the gift of the practice is my ability to understand that I'm feeling angry, that I'm triggered, and that I can modulate my response. I have a choice in terms of how I respond to my triggers that does not necessarily have to lead to suffering or unskillful behavior. That's the trigger. I mean, that's the answer. This is the spaciousness, this is the wisdom and understanding that comes to us through the practice. But it does not mean you will not have negative emotions. And so this is a big misunderstanding about this whole practice. You think just because a person is an arahant or an enlightened being, he no longer has fear, he no longer has anger, he no longer has jealousy. No, it's not that way at all. We all have these emotions, no matter how evolved we are, as spiritual beings. The only difference is our ability to be aware of the reactions that we have and our ability to control our responses to what triggers us. That is the awakened, enlightened being. So I say this is very important because people tend to get down on themselves when they think, I shouldn't get angry, or I should be more forgiving, I should be more compassionate. No, it's okay. Whatever you are, it's okay. You are the manifestation of who you are. So whatever you feel, and this is really, really important to understand. If you feel anger, if you feel jealousy, if you feel disappointment, that's the truth of what you're feeling. It's okay. You may not be proud of it. You may be a little bit ashamed of yourself that you're feeling jealous or envious, or you're bad-mouthing somebody, without thinking, you're gossiping, or you're trying to cut somebody down, jealousy is arising. That's not an easy thing to acknowledge, but it's what's within you. It's what's the truth of who you are. So the radical courage that this practice requires of us is to be able to say, okay, so whatever nasty thing I might have done, is an expression of who I am. So my job is to figure out why I did that. And by figuring out why I did that, you won't do it again. Because now you know what you needed to do to fulfill that sense of lack, that sense of shortcoming, self-esteem, fear, anxiety that you were feeling, that you were compensating for by doing that thing that you did. Oftentimes the afflictive emotions, the negative things we do, are compensations for something that's lacking in our own lives. So suffering, and this is the whole power of this whole teaching, suffering, afflictive emotions, are really gateways to deeper understanding of ourselves. So when you have an afflictive emotion, when you're angry about something, you're jealous or you're whatever, that is a moment to really look at yourself with courage, openness, and acceptance, and say, it's okay. It's okay. Why was this here? Let me learn from this. Let me see the truth of who I am by how I react to my situation. And this is where the mind opens, the heart opens, and awakening occurs. This is the route to awakening, by looking at your afflictive emotions. Now, this is not normally kind of, you know, taught, but this really is the road to truth, is understanding your afflictive emotions. Thank you. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.